It is Saturday, the 7th of November, 2015, and this is episode 264 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along to another episode. I am Chris, and Ian's with me again. Hello, Ian.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Yeah, it is afternoon, not even evening. Oops. Saturday again. So, what have we got to cover today? Well, we're going to cover the news, and we're going to start with Chrome OS, which we talked about last week, and we said that there were rumours that it was going to be rolled up and combined with, in fact, not really combined, it's going to get superseded by Android. OS. But that's apparently not true. Google have come out this week and strongly denied it.
Well,
are you saying they're lying about themselves?
So this is from their own post. Over the last few days, there's been some confusion about the future of Chrome OS and Chromebooks based on speculation that Chrome OS will be folded into Android. True. While we've been working on ways to bring together the best of both operating systems, aha! There's no plan to phase out Chrome OS. So I think my
When it's on a Chromebook, it's going to be called Chrome OS. When it's on a phone, it's going to be called Android. But they have been working to try and get Android apps working inside of Chrome OS, right? And I guess that's where the overlap's going to become almost, they're just going to merge. But I guess they've just been careful to not destroy the good faith they've built up with schools and stuff.
My prediction, I will do a cheesy prediction. 3 years from now, there won't be Chrome OS.
Yeah, okay. Or it'll be called Android Chrome OS.
It'll just be called Android. Yeah. And you can get the best of Chrome OS and Android. And I think all they're trying to do is make sure, as you say, they don't destroy the good work they've done so far. You know, it's big in the
schools have gone, we just spent loads of money on Chromebooks. Don't close that off.
Yeah, and I said last time that this whole rumor, just if you're making a commitment for 3 years, you're then looking at it going, so am I going to spend $1,000 on this or $1,000 on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it just puts that doubt in the air, doesn't it? So that's why they've come out and clarified, I guess. We've been having all the news this week about all the resurgence of the Snoopers Charter, which they conservatives failed to get through. When the Lib Dems were kind of curtailing them a little bit, they haven't got that restriction anymore. So they're back with a vengeance. And it's all the things that we kind of didn't want, which is basically mass scale recording of data, no regulatory oversight, no judicial oversight, very little requirements to, well, basically strong requirements on companies to open up and de-restrict all the access to the data that sort of internet companies hold. So kind of headlines being 12 months worth of every single person's internet access. So every single site they visit should be recorded for up to 12 months.
No, just on that, what could possibly go wrong? if you think of all the stuff we've covered in the last few months, you know, who could possibly leak that data?
Yeah.
Talk.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just a big store of data, and they liken it to saying it's just the modern equivalent of a itemized phone bill, which is just it's not true. It's far, far wider than that. If you visit, I'm not too keen on the conservatives.co.uk, that sits, you know, therefore in your record, whereas a phone number is a different thing entirely. It's because the internet is so many things. It's what you watch, it's where you go, it's where you shop, it's what you buy, it's all those things. And all these powers bring in the right for the government to know that about you with no restriction.
And also, to me, it's part of your kind of, I don't know, your digital footsteps, you know, your kind of path that you take. And I see I'm trying to remember the name, Guardian did a series of like 4 or 5 videos all about internet and security. And what they were showing was, you know, one of these kind of, they call themselves like security researchers, with the information that we post, you know, so they can work out, I've got an Xbox and you can easily work out I'm on a PS4 and all these other things, just made it far easier to work out what you were doing, when you were at home, when you were doing this, when you were doing that. This is all part of it as well. I mean, TokTok just yesterday said it was only 134,000 people, and from information leaked, they can't possibly do anything with you, you know, financially. And it's like, no, but it's but with the information that's already leaked from all the other places.
They combine it together and off they go, yeah.
And that's my issue with this. And the fact that it's 12 months for access by police, security services and other public bodies.
Mm.
And it just, I don't know, it just kind of, as you say, it just builds up that picture of you. And I mean, we've already seen the last sort of 3-4 years, things like blacklisting. You know, people were blacklisted back in the 70s and 80s.
We take a step back about what we used to say about China and how they monitor their citizens. Now, we have got government-based black and white lists of where you can and can't go and recording when you can and can't go there. We've got censorship. We've got the now mass surveillance of all citizens, regardless. You know, this is mass collection of data. It's not targeted collection of data at specific individuals with specific reason to be targeting. So you know, you take a step back, and no matter, even if this is, you know, it's nowhere near the kind of, you know, full on government gateways that some of these other countries have, we're not far away from that. And now that they've got these abilities to restrict, we've already seen the abuse of the whitelist and the blacklist for access to sites. Where are we headed?
And all I was going to make was there was a kind of this blacklisting back in the 70s and 80s of people where they could work. And it was a kind of known, well, it wasn't known, but people felt they were a victim of it. And it's only come out in the last few years that they were, and that was in place. So what's happening now? What's happening with the data that's getting captured now that we don't know about, that it's only going to be, you know, 5 years, 20 years from now that somebody will say, actually, look what was happening. You know, you were being...
And I guess there's one other point to be made, which is actually they were doing this anyway. So at the end of the day, is it better now that it is law and therefore it's legal for them to do it?
Well, they were doing it with phone bills, weren't they? So they've come out with some of the kind of news that came out around this new bill was the fact that they've been keeping 12 months of phone records anyway.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it, maybe some of this is just putting laws in place which says they are actually legally allowed to do this, rather than just doing it completely, independently and illegally, which they were doing before. I don't think there's any doubt that a lot of what they were doing before is illegal. And they, when they were told that was going to get removed, they had to find a way to make it legal. And this Snoopers Charter is the way they do it. It just stinks.
And I mean, there's a couple other points. So the next makes explicit in law for the first time security services powers for the bulk collection of large volume of personal communications data, makes explicit in law for the first time the powers of the security services and police to hack into and bug computers and phones, places new legal obligation on companies to assist in these operations to bypass encryption.
Yeah, so effectively, again, they're making it legal for them to hack in and do the things that they were doing anyway that was, you know, are found to be illegal because of all the snooping, the whistleblowing that's been going on.
And this will be interesting how it plays out. Apple continually say that, you know, our encryption means nobody can break into this.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the next thing. They're now going after any software, end-to-end encryption that they believe they cannot interject and listen in on. As you say, Apple have make much to the fact that they cannot, even by subpoena or, you know, by warrant, say, in this country, give away communication data because they themselves cannot crack it. It's encrypted end to end over secure channels and they cannot break that encryption themselves. But again, the government have come and said that that's something they're going to enforce, the reversal of that. Like I said, I don't know how they reverse that. They have said there are certain end-to-end things like banking, which, you know, they won't be trying to break the encryption of, but nevertheless, they still want their way in. It makes no sense. I can see the sentiment behind it, which is that they want to be able to, if they have a warrant, they want to be able to listen to someone's communications, and that's what they're kind of saying here. It doesn't matter what a judge says. It's for some of these services, they still can't listen in to those, you know, and they don't want to have those places where, you know, paedophiles or terrorists can actually go and communicate. It's just a dangerous direction, I think.
Yes, and I can totally understand how they're trying to keep the country safe. You know, we're seeing, you know, terrorist alerts all over the world, and although I don't think some of them are as kind of necessarily, you know, current, and, you know, we've seen it in the past, you know, all of a sudden Britain's at, you know, terror alert 5 or whatever.
We have been at imminent danger of terrorist attack for probably about 10 years now. You know, that as a citizen, do I feel completely at risk every day? No, I've never.
And just going back to that commissioner's charter, I mean, it was Theresa May that did all this announcement. She told MPs the introduction of the most controversial part of the storage of everyone's internet connection records, tracking the websites, which is banned as too intrusive in the US and every European country, including Britain, was simply the modern equivalent of an itemised phone bill. Yeah. Edward Snowden, it just, as he put it, it legitimises mass surveillance. It is the most intrusive and least accountable surveillance regime in the West. So it's just going back to your point about, you know, we criticise China and some other places that are just all locked down and you can't. So we're not locked down as such, but everything is tracked.
Yeah. And when America think when it's too harsh for American conservatives. Yeah, there we go. Right. Fast broadband. Let's talk about other things the government keeps saying. Apparently, by 2020, we're all going to have rocket ship fast broadband. This comes off the back of announcements in 2010, 2012, 2015, where we're always promised that we're going to be the fastest in Europe, because it's an easy thing to say because no one ever chases them down. And they've never, ever met their obligation. But nevertheless, they're going to say it again because it sounds good and it keeps our eyes off of the fact what they're tracking.
Yes, I actually think this is a good thing. If it's delivered. So
what makes you think this one's gonna be delivered?
Well, they're playing with statistics, as you said right at the start. I moved in here coming up for 12 years ago now. I remember people at the time, because I whenever I visited a house, I then went online and made sure what broadband I could get.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I know sounds daft, but for me it was really important. And so the sentiment around this now puts broadband as an equivalent to electricity, water and gas. You know, it is a utility.
Agreed.
And I think it is important.
But what the government are doing here is playing the risk game of, well, this is the natural progression of this technology. They haven't been actively involved in much of what's happened around the internet. It's consumer-driven demand, and what they're making a bet is that consumer-driven demand is going to be enough that we will have really fast broadband. And okay, they may be saying they're going to have some sort of nice to have. Oh, you know, it's important in water and stuff. I don't know. I'm cynical.
Because there's still places that don't have broadband. There are still places where they just don't have it.
And there's no sign that it will ever will. And I guess they're now saying at least they'll have a lifeline.
At least they'll have a lifeline. And it's basically, if you want it, then the providers have to get a way of doing it for you.
A legal right requirement of an affordable connection. There's no, what's affordable?
So there's, and that's one woolly word. The other bit that they're playing with is this idea of fast broadband or high speed broadband.
Yes.
So high speed broadband, the Conservatives said was greater than 24 meg. Ofcom, who are the, you know, allegedly independent, and they've said it's 30 meg, but the Tories are continuing with it. No, it's actually 24. So that's super fast.
I'm not sure what the difference between the two.
No, sorry, it's not super fast. That's high speed. But what Cameron's pledging is fast broadband.
Yes.
Because fast broadband just means 10 meg.
Which, you know, 5 years ago was still, you know, what we'd call a rocket ship. And, you know.
So. Or, I mean, I still work with what this, like, they're getting 4 meg. That's all they can get.
Mm-hmm.
2 meg and 4 meg. And that's, and you know, really, really bad upload. It still feels, you know, that is slow.
Anyway, we've heard it all before. I guess it's, you know, when they put this legal requirement onto a company for each person to be able to get affordable, where does it come from? Well, it comes from people paying extra in non hard to reach areas.
Yeah, thanks Virgin for putting my bill up.
Exactly. Twitter, ever been confused by the favorite star? Well,
no,
your days of confusion are over, because they are swapping it with hearts.
Who cares?
I love that tweet. I love it. And now you can say it with a heart.
So how did you use favorites?
Just if there was a link in a tweet that I wanted to go back to at some point, say it was an article and I wanted to read it, I'd favorite it, because it's then easy to go back to it.
Interesting. I never used it that way.
So mine was basically bookmarking for things I wanted to go back to.
Yeah, mine was basically almost a like. Yeah, like that. So if I may have done that a few times,
but it wasn't. I don't really like things.
But there seemed to be quite a lot of people that did use it as a favoriting system, as in it's a favorite in the context of an internet browser. So it's a bookmark that you can go back to and look at. Same as you. Whereas for me, see, if I wanted to save a bookmark, I would throw it in Pinboard or throw it in Pocket. You know, and it was out of Twitter then.
I mean, I very rarely ever go back to the ones I press star on, thinking I'm going to go and have a read of that at some other point. But yeah, no, but I don't think I was ever confused by what it was.
No.
It's up to you what you make of it, what you want.
But unfortunately, this is such an unnecessary change has caused such an unnecessary reaction.
Well,
lots
of
people getting excited.
That's what happens on the internet. People get excited. They don't know why they're excited. They're either outraged, excited, or cannot believe that a change has been made.
The best bit was like folks saying, I liked the star because it was like, it didn't mean anything. It was a heart. Does that mean I'm loving you? Does that mean I'm, I don't know, as a big burly man, should I be really hearting a post? And then it would follow up with a, follow me on Instagram, where you can only heart something. But it's so it's just how it's a different context, but some people really, really didn't like it.
They wanted their stars back. Maybe they should put an option in the thing. Do you want a heart or do you want a star? Like a thumbs up. Like, I guess it's that. I guess there is an argument along those lines, which is Facebook, you know, they're hopefully bringing the dislike button. They keep talking about it. But thumbs up. Do you thumb up and do you star, do you heart, for example, something which is pretty tragic?
Yes.
But you just want to acknowledge it, and a star does acknowledge it, and it doesn't say one way or the other how you're acknowledging it.
Well, I think what they're doing with the like, because there was all that chat about dislike, but what they're going to do it with is emojis. They're going to have, I think it was 6 or 7 standard emojis. So instead of liking, so like is almost like the big smile, and the dislike was like the,
so you can be, I am indifferent to this post. I marginally like this one.
But you're right, because a like was almost, so yes, you could like something, but it was almost like a support button as well. But mm-hmm. there was sometimes you just wanted to say, if ever I wanted to dislike what you've just written, because it's, you know, I don't know, you've been in a car crash, and you want to support them, but you want to say, oh, that's unlucky, or that's horrible, or, you know, and that's where it needed something else. That's why I think that's why like always had an issue. And the heart on Instagram never had an issue. It's just like, yeah, love it. Love it. And the star on Twitter was just always like the post.
Fair enough.
But I think they've lost it. I think it's just, it feels a bit desperate. I think Twitter...
Everything they're doing at the moment feels like tiny, weeny, desperate steps rather than...
Yeah.
And I guess that it all stems... You know, they've got this service. It does an amazing thing. They've got it refined. It does it very well. They've got millions upon millions upon millions of users. And people kind of know how they use Twitter. They've got what is in effect a service. And the only reason that they're doing these desperate measures is because someone's telling them they have to grow.
Yeah.
They have to constantly and forever grow.
They're flatlined. But the danger is now everybody's talking about how to save Twitter and why Twitter's dying. And it's just the...
When it's not all... dying, it's flatlined.
Exactly.
And I know those two words aren't good, but what I mean is it's still, like I say, you've just got, you've got multiple millions of users using it in billions of different ways. And, you know, there's no site that isn't integrated with Twitter at some level.
No, but they feel a bit like a Samsung for services at the moment, and that they're just throwing stuff at the wall to see one of these is going to work, one of these is going to go boom and take off.
But we shouldn't forget that, you know, Google have done that in the past. Everyone's done that in the past. The scattergun approach.
But Google could afford to. Google were like, you know, they were like masses of different things, so they could afford to, you know, like, so they had all that, you know, what do you call it? Google Plus. You know, they could try that.
Oh, they had Google Wave before that. Don't forget Google Wave.
Google Wave, but even things like Google Reader, and there's a whole other stuff that I still miss Google Reader, but there's still a whole other things that. That they can afford to shut down because other things are, you know, keep them going.
And
whereas Twitter's quite...
Agreed.
For its millions of people, it's quite niche.
But they locked down the service. It's, you know, they made that decision to lock down the service, so...
Yeah. Well, it's back to investors, I think. I think they were chasing the dollar, and they said, developers, you got us here. Don't need you anymore. Sod off. And now it's like, ooh, hold on.
Yeah, now things look a bit stale and non-growy.
Speaking of which,
BlackBerry may have just made its last phone. I say this with no actual having seen, held, or, you know, particularly paid attention to this, but the reports on the latest BlackBerry, which is effectively an Android phone, is that it's got a physical keyboard. But beyond that, it's nothing special. Nothing that's going to stick around.
No.
Yeah. Is that about what you want to say? Is, you know, it's got fair stats. It's a fairly big whopper of a thing. It slides. Well, it's a slider, so you can do that by closing the slider.
Well, the thing is, like, it looks like a modern Android phone with the slider keyboard. So that's its unique selling point, because I don't think there's anybody else doing that anymore. So if you're really desperate for the physical keyboard, then fantastic. But then you read through these early impressions, and despite all that good hardware, camera sucks, and the battery life is seemingly pretty poor.
Well, I think they said because it's such a big battery, you might expect more. It's still got a day's worth of charge, which, again, we've kind of said before is what we expect as a minimum.
Yeah, well, they were getting through to 10 in the evening, which for a massive battery is pretty poor. So I think they were saying the massive batteries, you know, on other platforms are basically getting them through to, you know, middle of the next day kind of thing.
All right. Anyway. But anyway, it's basically core Android, so there's plenty of other options. So the real only selling point is the physical keyboard, which people still swear by. So there would probably be a demand for that keyboard, but, you know, I think that's it's a shrinking demand. 1Password for Teams is here, so they've basically extended their service to allow companies to basically have 1Password.
Yeah, that's actually really nice.
Yeah, you're the fan of 1Password. Is it still only Mac, or have they?
No, it's everywhere.
They've spread everywhere now, yeah.
And this actually looks really well thought through as well. So it won't be a free product. It's a public beta announced. But I think for probably small teams and maybe even middle sized companies, it's a good option. Because password management can be really challenging with. You know, lots and lots of developers and lots of teams.
There's there's, you know, with PCI compliance and all that kind of stuff, it's very important inside firms, especially distributed firms, to enforce that, and by having these kind of one central place where passwords can be enforced to be strong and central, then I guess that helps.
And password management tools are generally rubbish. As in, they look rubbish, they feel
Yeah,
old.
I use LastPass, and it feels clunky at best. It sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. I've never really used 1Password to know whether that would solve my current woes. I mean, LastPass does an all right job. That's as far as I'll go with it.
Yeah, and LastPass also gets hacked every now and then, so it's always good.
as would anyone else that was the size of LastPass, basically. That's what I'd say to that. I don't think it'd be long before, if 1Password takes off, it will also get...
There was a horrible article about 3 weeks ago that 1Password, if you've got a certain option enabled, basically keeps your password sitting on your Mac in the clear on a text file. And it was like, ouch, that's not great.
But then I think nowadays, you know, when they used to don't write your passwords down on a piece of paper and have it in your house or whatever, I think that's actually now better than having weak passwords, because the chances of someone breaking into your house to get your passwords are slim, whereas to actually try and hack in and get your passwords, that's quite strong.
I did see a photo of something in a shop, and it was a proper hardbacked, you know, like you get like address books and birthday books, it was your password book. And it had, like, you know, URL and website name and password. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
That's so people must buy that. Surely.
Yes, so. But like I say, I think that for everyday passwords for things like Amazon and, you know, whatever, you're actually less likely, like I say, to have a physical break in and take your password list than someone is going to break into Amazon or break into
Password
Talk
00 with an uppercase P.
Yeah.
Have at it.
Microsoft is dropping unlimited OneDrive storage. So you used to be able to buy their Office 365 subscription, and then you'd have an unlimited amount of storage to put stuff into on OneDrive. Turns out that some people actually took that to be unlimited and have put 75 terabytes of data into their drive. Microsoft are basically having to backtrack. They're now going to drop that down to a 1 terabyte limit. And as much as it's frustrating that they're obviously making this kind of U-turn, the fact that it now is limited, I can kind of see how 75 terabytes of data for one user is a bit ridiculous. Where do you come on it? So you just don't like the backtrack?
I don't like the backtrack because there were a few people commenting in the post saying I moved specifically from Google Drive because you made it such a... Not only did you you improved your application support, you improved your third-party support, but also you made the drive space available. And for a year later to say, actually, no, that's not working.
But how much... But is 75 terabytes acceptable?
No, but deal with the minority.
For me, it's a bit like...
So what they were saying was that this is 14,000 times the average. So that's so you do a bit of math and that means the average is 5 gig. So why not
but isn't
deal
it like
with the minority?
The old... If everyone used 75 terabytes of space, it wouldn't work, right?
Yeah.
So 5.5 gigs is considerably less than 1 terabyte.
But how many users do you think were storing that many? Do you think there was maybe 3? We're storing 75 terabytes.
And then there was
maybe another 100 or 200 that were stored in, 10 terabytes or, 5 terabytes.
But it's a bit like the old internet unlimited. They all now come with a fair usage policy. And maybe that would be a better way of doing this and telling someone that 75 terabytes is not as fair use. I don't see this. I see this as economics. It's a bit like having an all-you-can-eat buffet at a local restaurant and then someone goes in there and takes so much of that buffet that actually it's just an untenable thing.
So I agree, but I just love the headline. Microsoft drops unlimited OneDrive storage after people use it for unlimited storage. Yeah. And that sums it up. So why didn't they just say, actually...
They should have just put a high limit on it.
Yeah. Practical limit, 5 terabyte. See if you want to come over. It's basically unlimited for normals. And see for you extreme guys that want to go and store your massive, horn library or torrent library, whatever it is, you need to go elsewhere.
Well, it sounds like these guys were storing a whole PC images and stuff like that. So literally backing up the whole drive.
75 terabytes.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's more than
so think
Cam
about
used to download.
Yeah.
Maybe one of these users is him.
Well, it can add one drive bad boy to his PlusNet bad boy list.
PlusNet ban list. BBC is going to launch unpaid for downloads, which are going to be built into iPlayer. So this is basically the BBC back catalogue, which they'll allow you to digitally buy and digitally own. And they're going to roll that out via their iPlayer software. So they're going to continue with their 30 days for free of anything that's been broadcast on the BBC. And beyond that time, if you want a series or a show or you want to watch something, then... they're going to be gradually unlocking things. $1.89 per show, which seems quite steep. I don't know why that feels steep. $7.99 for series, and they're going to have series passes and stuff like that as well.
Pricing I thought was much the same because I'm wondering if the $1.89 was like, if it's a... Because BBC tend to do like 6-part series, and then it's unusual. You might get an odd 8 one or you might get a 13 one if it's like the Doctor Who's, but it's usually 6. So I'm wondering if that's why it's $1.89 and it's £8 for the... it feels like DVD type prices, and it feels like
that's
Amazon probably
that's
Netflix
where it's,
prices.
Yeah, that's where it stems from. But where is Amazon or Netflix? Netflix is £6 a month, right? But it unlocks everything, and maybe they could think about a pass like that, so a subscription type service which unlocks it, rather than that seems to be the modern method, right?
Yeah, but I pay a license fee and I can watch content for 30 days. For free,
sure, but this offers you all their back catalogue unrestricted without that 30-day restriction.
So I think if the BBC were to look at maybe doing a different license fee model, then I think that's when something like that would kick in.
But they put all their stuff on Netflix, and you pay a Netflix subscription, and BBC stuff is part of that. I mean that BBC have a great back catalogue.
No, they do. But for years it's been like DVD and Blu-ray. And this to me is just equivalent of DVD and Blu-ray.
Exactly what it is.
And I don't think they're tackling that streaming option. And there must be something reason why. I still think there's something around license fee.
Yeah. Well, you're right. They're charging after they don't want to have to physically distribute discs. People don't really want to buy discs anymore. They just want to unlock that license. And hopefully this, once you've paid for the series, you can watch it wherever you like. That's what I'd expect from it. Activision's been spending money on Candy Crush, basically king.com, which have had some massive hits over the years. I think they started out as a gambling empire, to be honest, and then they
that's
made
what I thought as well, like years ago.
I'm pretty sure they were gambling yeah. games, and then they worked out that they could charge more money by making addictive games like Candy Crush, and they absolutely nailed it. And Activision Blizzard have bought them for $5.9 billion, so loads of cash. And it almost feels a bit like, are they on the down? You know, it seems like a strange time to buy them. I guess they're still really popular, but Candy Crush at one point was like the most pervasive thing ever, and it's not anymore.
This feels like a great deal for King and a bit desperate from Activision. I mean, yeah. and it seems like it's all cash. It's not even like all these crazy
I don't think Activision is short of you, Bob. I mean,
no, but it still feels a lot of money for something that it must be past its peak.
But then also, I guess they've got all that technology in the background, and you think about all the data that they've collected over the time that they've been doing what they've been doing. It's probably a massive, massive user base.
And I'm on Wikipedia trying to find out about King and where they started off as, and it's all back into all they talk about is social games for web and mobile.
I'm pretty sure they used to like have casino games and slot machines.
But that's what I'm saying. That was just under that social title. Mm. But the interesting bit is, so by first quarter of 2012, King had 30 million unique users. Users jumped to 408 million by the end of 2013. So that was that massive growth. Yep. Sales increased from 62 million in 2011 to 1.8 billion in 2013.
Yeah.
Sales in 2014 were 2.6 billion.
But they're still growing then.
So
if you look at it that way, the return on, you know, if they've continued that growth, then their probably return on investment is probably only 2 or 3 years potentially.
But the latest stats, quarter four 2014, King had 356 million monthly uniques with 8.3 million spending money. So 97%, almost 98% of people are playing the games for free, but the 2.3% are paying on average $23 a month.
So that's all the people going, getting to the end of them and then going, oh no, let me get to the next one. Let me get there.
Which is a massive amount of money when you put it that way. I mean, if it was a new game launched and they said to play this, you need to pay $24 a month, you'd be like, no.
Nope. But yeah, it's different. Yeah, agreed.
Wow.
Apple TV. You've lived with it now for 2 weeks?
No, a week and one day.
Week and a day.
But there's actually been a couple of nice changes this week. So first up, Plex came out, so it was approved. And
so in other words, scrap all their interface. Let's go with Plex.
Well, but they've actually
you had a Plex
followed,
play already.
Yeah, I've got. So as Shaq said, you get Plex and PS4, you get Plex and Xbox One, and I've now got Plex on Apple TV, which launches quicker. The interface I much prefer. And they've actually kept with the kind of Apple guidelines. So it fits in really nicely with the environment. Really, really nice app. See, for a first release that they've only had 5 weeks to work on, 6 weeks to work on, really impressed. Also, the discoverability. Oh, I'm glad I said that.
You'd got that right.
Yeah, is much better.
So they've already improved that then.
Yeah, charts have come out and categories have come out. And I'm guessing it must have been there wasn't enough content to justify having the categories and the charts. So
or that they've come out, to have a chart, you've got to have had some data to fill it, I guess.
Exactly. It was just, but it would have been nice to, day one, there should have been.
The placeholders.
But it was, I guess, 5 days after launch, it was there.
Yeah, so, that does sound like a week's worth of data, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, so okay. that makes sense. And also Now TV's there, so a little bit more UK content. So some quite quick growth.
Now TV's paid for, isn't it?
Yeah, so Now TV is like the Sky.
Yeah, so
how
much does that cost?
Well, is it not okay. 8 or 9 a month? But also you can buy individual things on it. So if you just want to buy a game of football, I think you can buy that.
That's the quick way in, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and although it's expensive, because I think one game's maybe £8. But if you look at a subscription service, if that's the game you want to see and you don't want to see any others,
yeah,
it works out cheaper. So yeah, it's picked up quite nicely.
I think it was always going to anyway. It was, you know, even if they hadn't fixed it that quickly, yep, it was always going to get fixed.
I still think it shows far more promise than the Apple Watch as a platform.
Still playing games in it or not really?
I've not had much chance this week. I was out watching Spectre and I was out trying to shoot fireworks, as in like film them. I just realised that sounded like I was some hillbilly.
Get out!
Slightly tempted to take drone, but not tempted enough to actually take drone. So
always a risk. Always.
Maybe next year
would be awesome.
So I've not had much time this week.
Yeah, fair dues. All right. Well, we'll maybe catch up on that. All right. Well, I think that's the end of our podcast for this week. So thank you very much for listening. You can find out more about us, digitaloutbox.com, and we're emailable, info@digitaloutbox.com. And Twitter, Digital Outbox, if you want to tweet us, you can. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and my racing and stuff is on academyracer.co.uk. About you, Ian?
Blog is Ian.net. Twitter is Streeper. Well done in releasing some fantastic videos this week.
Yeah, go check out the YouTube channel.
And also thanks to my printer for yet again failing when I need it yesterday.
Printer? What's that?
I've just bought a new one. I hate printers. I absolutely detest printers.
The only time I ever use my printer is tax return at the end of the year. So it's always bad news.
What a rage I was in yesterday. I was physically like... remember I said to you about joypads? I've never really... So I can kind of twist it, but I've never thrown it or broken it. Yesterday, I could put a fist through it. Oh, boy, I was gone. Red mist and everything.
All because of the printer?
All because of a print head that costs more than a new printer. So there's a new printer ordered.
Fair enough. There we go. We'll speak to you next week. But we'll actually make it... We don't know the schedule at the moment.
No, I ain't gonna be a couple of weeks. It's gonna start.
Yeah, let's. Two weeks from now, we'll be back on the airwaves. Speak to you then. Bye bye.
Bye.